Hey, let me make a head start. Arnaud Bontemps wrote in his anthology The Great Slave Narratives, a promised land and a chance to make a new life as a free man was always the goal, even though sometimes the realization fell short of the expectations. These words could have been written to characterize the short, and I must say, if you're looking for heroes, you're at the wrong place, the rather tragic life of the man we have come to know as Jacobus Eliza Johannes Kapitein, who lived from 1717, we think, to 1747. Kapitein is best known, if known at all, for his theological tract advocating the compatibility of slavery with Christian freedom. In the early 18th century Dutch Republic, this stance was not uncommon. What caused sensation was the fact that this thesis was defended by a former slave. Delivered as a lecture and later also published in Latin in 1742, the tract was translated into Dutch and quickly became a bestseller, with at least 4 reprints in the first year alone, something that most of our theological books don't make, not even in 20 years. Because of his treatise, Kapitein became a celebrated figure. Friends and acquaintances wrote poems to honor him, and the churches in which he conducted services couldn't contain the crowds. Everybody wanted to see this Moor, who was destined to become our West Indian Company missionary at the Gold Coast. However, once stationed as a reformed minister at Almina Castle, Kapitein couldn't live up to his and other people's expectations. Almina proved to be a very difficult and frustrating place, both for chaplaincy work and mission work. After only 4 years, Kapitein died, disillusioned and in debt. The realization that Bontemps wrote about fell short of the expectation. Now, several people have studied Kapitein and his book. The best known publications are in English. Let me add that. I thought you would not be too happy of having many Dutch titles. The best known English publications are Quasi Praa's work, Jacobus Eliza Johannes Kapitein, David Pobie's work, which I saw here in the library, Mission and Change, and a recent translation from the Latin text by Grant Parker, The Agony of Ansar. All these books study Kapitein's treatise as an academic piece and conclude that it is a conservative and at times somewhat selective essay on slavery written by Kapitein towards the end of his divinity studies in Leiden. As said, in this paper I would like to take a slightly different angle. Though I do not reject the notion that the treatise was composed as an academic essay, possibly aimed at pleasing his benefactors and his future West Indian Company employees, I would like to experiment with studying Kapitein's treatise as a slave narrative. Reason for this is that Kapitein frames his exposé with an autobiographical setting, thus foregrounding his personal slavery experiences as the interpretive lens through which the remainder of the text should be understood. As said, I would like to develop it in 4 steps. I will set the scene by a short biography of Kapitein. Secondly, I will explore the genre of the slave narrative. Thirdly, I will try to reread Kapitein's treatise as a slave narrative, and then I will hopefully come to some conclusions, but I stand corrected and please help me with more, at looking what insights we might gain from looking at Kapitein's text as a slave narrative and what questions it might pose to the genre of the slave narrative if this could be considered a slave narrative. The biography. In his well-known book, Slavery and Social Death, Orlando Patterson describes a slave as a socially dead person. Not only, Patterson writes, does a slave not have a socially recognized existence outside his master, alienated from all the rights and claims of his birth, he ceases to belong in his own right to any legitimate social order. Patterson links these notions of what he calls natal alienation to observations by Michael Creighton among the descendants of plantation slaves in Jamaica about the extraordinary shallowness of the slaves' genealogical and historical memory. The enslaved had a past, but were purposefully isolated culturally and thus alienated from their ancestral heritage. This, combined with an often traumatic experience of enslavement, might give some clues as to why many enslaved did not even so much as remember their name once they had become plantation slaves. Kapitein, in a way, is a case in point of this social death person. He summarizes his entire pre-slavery period in one single sentence. He writes, as a boy of 7 or 8, orphaned by war or by some other cause, I was sold to Admiral Steinhardt, who had landed at a certain place in Africa called St. Andrew's River, present-day Ivory Coast, in order to buy slaves. And even this single line narrative, according to the Dutch translation of the dissertation, was not based on Kapitein's own recollections, but information supplied by the slave trader who had bought him and who he later met again. Gifted by this admiral to befriended merchant Jacobus van Gogh, who lived at Fort San Sebastian at Shama, present-day Ghana, the boy received the name Kapitein. And we think this must have taken place around 1725. The man that becomes known as Kapitein does not relate a single other detail about his past, neither his original African name, his country of origin, or his area of origin, his mother tongue, or his ethnic group are known. With his enslavement, this unidentified African boy, as it were, ceases to exist, and a man called Kapitein comes into being, a creation of his enslavers. And if I look at the rest of his biography, you wonder whether this creation has ever stopped, whether he ever was able to reach back after this moment of enslavement. Also, details about Kapitein's enslavement years are rare. In hindsight, Kapitein writes that Van Gogh doted on me with paternal love thanks to his good character. Whether Kapitein worked as a domestic slave, whether and how he interacted with the castle slaves, what knowledge he had of chattel slavery in the forts, and to what extent he had contacts with the enslaved or freed Africans or with the mulatto community in the vicinity of the forts is not known. Can somebody... I love the sun, but it doesn't help me read my paper. Yeah, thank you very much. All we know about him from archival material is that in 1725, his owner, Van Gogh, was transferred to another fort in Ghana, Fort Nassau, and that when Van Gogh repatriated in April 1727, he took Kapitein along, promising him education, both Christian and professional, so that Kapitein would be able to support himself. The story does not tell whether Kapitein was given any say in his relocation to the Netherlands. A variety of sources confirm that Van Gogh was true to his word and continued to provide for Kapitein even after Kapitein had formally ceased to be a slave. Slavery had been abolished in the Dutch Republic in 1648, and arrival in the Netherlands implied automatic manumission. Remarkably, however, this event is not explicitly mentioned in Kapitein's autobiography or autobiographical narrative, nor is there any indication that the relation that had been established between Van Gogh and Kapitein substantially changed after Kapitein had become a free person. Kapitein's years in the Netherlands are somewhat better documented than his earlier life. In addition to his own materials, such as his book on slavery, his letters, poems. He wrote many poems, wrote them in Latin, sermons, etc. There are poems and letters by friends. There are official documents of his registration at the university, etc. From that material, we can deduce that on arrival, Van Gogh and Kapitein settled in The Hague. There is a long poem about how lovely the forests are in The Hague. And Kapitein was duly educated in Dutch language, in painting, and in Christianity. Through fellow catechists, Kapitein came into contact with Reverend Hendrik Velze, a reformed minister known for his missionary zeal. In Kapitein's own words, "Among the catechists, I became acquainted with the two generous sons of Willem Hendrik van Schuilenburg, who at the time were purported to have said to one of the sons of Hendrik van Velze, an eminent theologian, that they thought I should steer my career path towards theology, so that, God willing, I might afterwards show my people the way to a better religion, since they needed to be diverted from the cult of idolatry." Kapitein's subsequent remark is quite telling. He says, "Now I admit that I do not clearly remember whether I disclosed to anyone that such an idea might appeal to me. But it is true that this theologian, for his part, always eager to spread the gospel, summoned me and asked me whether the report was true, and I replied that I did not shrink from such a proposal." Most biographers presume that Kapitein himself proposed becoming a missionary in Guinea. But by the phrasing of the sentences, you might also read a slightly different scenario. One wonders, if you really look at the text, whether the idea to become a missionary in Guinea was came originally from Kapitein, or was rather forcefully suggested to him by others as a kind of repayment for all the graces bestowed on him, such as education, with Kapitein, indebted to all his benefactors, only gradually becoming to embrace this idea as his own, because in his treatise he speaks about his calling to be useful to his people as the greatest obligation and no injustice. Now, to my reading, that seems to imply at least some reluctance of going back to Elmina. Grant Parker also comments that Kapitein's response to Velze's query seems curiously tentative. However, from the moment Kapitein affirms his availability as a possible missionary, his career took a rapid course. Van Velze, the missionary minister, contacted his foster parent or a slave owner, whichever way you want to phrase it, Van Gogh, who willingly set aside funds for Kapitein's education. Supported by Van Gogh and other patrons, Kapitein enrolled in the Latin school in The Hague and set out to study, these were the days, Latin, Hebrew, Greek, and Chaldean. Also, this was before he enrolled into university, huh? Also, his Christian education progressed. On July 8, 1735, Kapitein was baptized in the Kloosterkerk in The Hague, and the church was packed because they hadn't seen many Africans being baptized in The Hague. In June 37, Kapitein then moves to to Leiden to commence his divinity studies. His studies were enabled by a scholarship from the Hallert Foundation, as well as by a number of families who were willing to host him during his studies. In 1742, he successfully completed his divinity studies and was ordained shortly after, the first African Reformed, Dutch Reformed, I must add, minister to be ordained, and he was commissioned to serve as a minister of the Reformed Church at St. George's Castle in Elmina, employed by the West Indian Company. And for those of you who don't know, who were heavily dipped into slave trade at that very moment at Elmina. It was towards the end of his studies that Kapitein, as one of the most senior students sponsored by the Hallert Foundations, was asked by the curators of this foundation to deliver a lecture. And it is this lecture that was published as his well-known Dissertatio Politica Theologica on the compatibility of slavery and Christian freedom. Already in the 19th century, a lively discussion ensued as to whether this dissertatio was represented a PhD thesis. Then, as well as no. Now, this stance was rejected as nice, but not very likely to be true. What is, however, undeniably true was that Capitain's lecture, as well as his ordination, captured the public imagination. Considering the popularity of his treatise in Dutch, I already said it was republished many times, the many poems written to celebrate him, and the massive numbers of people showing up visiting the church service conducted by Capitain. And it seems that at certain times he was so overwhelmed that he actually went back into the vestry to hide because of the massive numbers of people coming to listen to him. I have a sort of George Whitfield associations if I hear that. A friend, in the early 1740s of the Dutch Republic, Capitain had become a celebrity, and expectations of him soared high. A friend composed a poem stating, the Dutch isn't slightly nicer, but his skin is black, but white is his soul, since Jesus himself prays for him. He will teach the Africans hope and faith and charity. With him, the Africans, once whitened by the Lamb, will always honor the Lamb. However hopeful and full of expectations and hope and etc. everybody was about Capitain, reality at Almina Castle proved to be a very different world from the Netherlands. As a highly educated black, holding the second highest position and the second highest salary in the castle, Capitain was perceived an anomaly. Initially, things seemed to go fairly well. The Director General, de Petersen, praised Capitain in his letters. And though there were very few reformed members in Almina Castle, there were about, I think, 107 people at the time, of about whom 21 were reformed and the others belonged to horrible sects, according to Capitain, such as Lutherans and Roman Catholics. So although there were very few reformed members in Almina Castle, and though neither the reformed nor the Lutherans nor the Roman Catholics led exemplary Christian lives, but rather cohabited with local women, and therefore couldn't receive communion, Capitain seemed positively minded. He plied himself with vigor